Hello, everyone, and welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema. I'm your host, Laura Romans, and I'm here with film critic Hugo Emmertzell.
Hey, everybody.
We're going to talk about our beloved lab suggestions board here at Lab 111 in Amsterdam, and some of the films that made it into this month's program, like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Children of Men, Paprika, Boys in the Hood, The Fault. There's so much. Like, just check out the website, but we're going to talk about some of our favorites. If you want to support the work we do, then you can leave us a review and share with other movie lovers, as it really helps other cinema lovers find us, and that really gives us a sense of purpose. Before we begin, I'd love to share some cool things going on in the coming weeks here at Lab 111 in Amsterdam. On the 17th and 18th of Jan, we have previews of the Oscar contender Chloe Zhao's Hamnet. Looking forward to it. Also, check out our matinee program of the amazing icon Jane Fonda, highlighting some of her best work. On the 28th, we have a Fight the Power screening of Goodbye Julia, followed by a panel talk discussing the ongoing genocide in Sudan. Hugo, how are you? What have you been up to?
It sounds like a shocking question. How are you?
How are you? I mean, I haven't seen you in a minute.
Yes, well, like, Happy New Year. This is the first time we see each other in 2026. I'm doing good. I've been watching a lot of films at home during the wintry weeks. Mm-hmm. I had a great time. Recently, I saw something great and also was kind of related to work because I saw the new Josh Safdie film, Marty
Ooh,
Supreme.
I can't wait to see
Timothy
it.
Chalamet.
We keep doing this, and I love that it keeps being Chalamet. Yeah. And I kind of want him to change his name.
He should at some point change his name.
Because it rolls off the tongue. Like, it really does.
Exactly. Anyway, it's an absolute banner. And I recently did an interview with the composer of the film, 10 Tricks Point Never. Daniel Lopatin, who is an insanely acclaimed and great musician by his own right, but he also did the scores for earlier Safdie brother films like Anka Gems and Good Time. And the new score of this film is absolutely insane. So it was a pleasure.
Nice.
Kind of one of my hero musicians as well to have an interview with him. So I'm still cherishing this experience of this conversation and this screening as well. Huge recommend for whenever it comes out.
Nice.
Yes. How about you?
Oh, I'm good. I've also already, we're on the sixth day of the year. I've watched 10 movies. So that's like kind of like
good score,
a good score of like what the status has been. The other day here at Lab, I went to the Lord of the Rings
extended edition
marathon. I dressed like a hobbit. It was very adorable. And that's always just the highlight of my year. I love the marathons. I've seen these movies, I think, every year since they came out.
I kind of do the same as well. Yeah. I've seen these films a million times easily.
But it's still always so good. Like whenever you, especially when you like reach Return of the King, you're like, oh yeah, like I barely remember some things. And maybe that's a concerning thing for, hey, if you're a neurologist, get in touch. But yeah, you're just like, oh, I didn't remember this. And it's always so nice to watch it with a huge like sold out room, and everyone gets a little more rowdy as the movies progress. Like during the fellowship, everyone's like really shy, and I will go, woo! And then everyone will be like, oh, this lady's concerning. And then by the end, everyone's like, for Frodo!
You're Hobbit Maxing, you know? You need to cultivate this Hobbit mindset.
You got a Hobbit Max. Well, Hobbit Girl Summer.
Sounds like a perfect way to kick off the new year, right?
Yeah.
Some deep immersion in Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm. It was great. And I think that's a good bridge to the suggestions board, because The Lord of the Rings is one that is found a lot at our lab suggestions board, which you find in the hallway at the entrance here at Lab 111. Good to know if you ever have any brilliant ideas about which movies you think we should screen. Write them on the board. If the pen works, you're in luck. And it might. It kind of like checks which movie you're writing down, and if your heart is pure, it works.
Yes.
And if it doesn't, it doesn't. So yeah, we look at all the suggestions. We kind of like list them. There's also a portal on the website where you can write in movies and you can vote for other movies. Do you ever write down suggestions, Hugo?
I've done it in the past as partially as a way to spite our friend and colleague Tom, who's the programmer here, but also out of my own interest. Then the only film I would write on there is, of course, Miami Vice by Michael Mann, a film that has yet to be picked and screened here in Lab 111.
Right.
But I'm actually scheming on something.
For the people listening and not watching, Hugo has a huge tattoo on his arm, which is, it says, time is luck.
Time is luck.
And which font is that?
It's the Miami Vice poster font, sick. Of course.
Okay, so
it's a quote from Miami Vice, which is my favorite film of all time for reasons that at some point I will again explain in the podcast.
Sure.
But for everybody who's kind of like relatively new, go to some of our earlier episodes and you'll hear the entire backstory of me in this film.
And you recently got to show this tattoo
to Colin Farrell, yes, who plays the lead role, Sonny Crockett, in the film. I was at the party in London and he was there and I was like,
look,
Colin,
at my tattoo.
Colin, I want to talk to you about Miami Vice. Look at this. And he's like losing his fucking mind. He's, holy shit, that's my fucking line.
That's his fucking line. I love, because you sent a picture and I was like, oh, he looks equal parts horrified and incredibly impressed.
He was very thankful because we had a deep chat about Michael Mann and Terrence Malick and some of these films he made in 2005, 2006. Which was an incredible run for him, but also a moment when he was suffering deep alcoholism. Mm, so it was a scary time for Farrell as well. And then he said to me like, oh, this is great. Usually at these parties, I'm only talking about my new things. I haven't had a conversation like
the
this
Miami
in a long
Vice.
Time. So this is dope. Aww, thank
that's
you.
That's so meaningful and cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I put one film in. Did you ever successfully use the suggestion board?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a story we've told on the podcast before, but if you haven't heard, I actually found out before I was on this podcast, I was listening to this podcast and I heard Tom go, yeah, with the suggestions board, there's this one lunatic who keeps writing Vampire's Kiss
the
on the board.
Film.
And then it's like dolly zoom out on my face, like, that's me. It's like every time they wipe the board down, the first thing that's back on there is Vampire's Kiss. And it was successful because we have been screening it, I think, for the last like 2 years. It comes back regularly because people just love that movie.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H.
For those who don't know, that's a ridiculous Nicolas Cage movie.
It started with a kiss.
Really hot.
A very special kiss.
You wanted her very badly.
Yeah.
A kiss that could drive you mad.
I hate interrupted love affairs, don't you?
Yep.
Where he's like, also he's like 23 in that, where he turns into a vampire slowly, and it's ridiculous, and I love it. Apart from that weird rape scene, anyway, this current lab suggestions program is very Laura coded, and I didn't even put any of these down, but I would. So I was thinking, Hugo, maybe we can talk about some of our favorites that are running right now.
Please, maybe we should start with explaining why is it Laura coded? What makes it so you?
Yeah, basically the list just reads as my Letterboxd favorites.
You didn't hack the website and just add all the things yourself.
Well, one of the movies is Hackers,
yes.
So would be on theme.
Possibly.
No, I think, you know, things like Brazil, things like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. But I think mostly the Neverending Story just feels like me as a movie.
You're quite obsessed with this film, right?
What is the secret of this enchanted book? What wonders are hidden within its pages? What magical spell does it cast on all who read it? What is the secret of the never-ending story?
I think that's just like how I describe myself as a movie, because it's depressing as hell, but also there's puppets. So it's like, yeah, that's who I am. You haven't seen it.
Yeah,
I just
wanted to say, can you give me the full pitch? Because I have never seen it. And at this point, I feel like I maybe should be ashamed that I haven't. Or did I just not have a childhood? What went wrong?
I feel like it's one of those things that, like, if you've seen it in your childhood, it means a lot to you. And I do feel like maybe if you watch it now and you haven't seen it before, it could be hella boring, but it's for the artistry alone, it's worth watching, because it's like this beautiful 80s fantasy story. And the framing device is kind of that this boy runs into this bookstore and he finds this magical book and he starts reading the book. And then what he reads in the book is basically the movie, but he also kind of influences what happens.
And choose your own adventure type book.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But it's mostly about like show courage and blah, blah, because he gets bullied in school. But it's basically about Atreyu, who's a boy, and he has to go on this adventure to name the princess or something. It's been a minute since I saw it. But he basically just journeys through these lands and encounters all these animatronic puppet creatures.
And the puppets are insane, right? I remember only just like clips and shots and stills of this like furry white
Falcor.
Dragon thing.
Yes, Falcor. It's like a dog dragon type situation. You know, it's one of those movies that when you really look at it, it's like, huh, is this good? But it's just, it looks amazing. And it's so monumental and representative of exactly that era of 80s that I love. It has a banging synth soundtrack. It's the Falcor, the puppet. It's like 40 feet long. It's huge. I don't know. I just love.
It's just real movie magic.
It's just more magic about the movie magic than it is about the plot. It is based on a novel, but then the writer of the novel, Michael Ende, he was really unhappy with how the movie ended up, so he didn't want to really endorse it.
And usually this is a good sign.
Usually this is a good
Stephen
sign.
Stephen King also hated the Kubrick version of The Shining.
Right.
And I think we all love the Kubrick version of The Shining.
It's not a controversial opinion, yes. No. So yeah, that's playing now. I really, really recommend people go see it because it's about like grief and about hope, but it's mostly about fuck-ass puppets. Is what it
ideal
is.
We actually asked our community if they had any of their films suggested picked for this program, and one of them actually sent a voice note in, so maybe we can take a listen.
Yes,
to that,
please.
Absolutely,
let's fucking go.
I chose the film The Never Ending Story because it was released in the 1980s and it marked my mother's childhood somehow. For one reason or another, it's a movie we have never been able to see together, so that's why I'm very, very grateful for this opportunity to finally watch it on a movie theater. This movie, it's about imagination, about fantasy, and see it in the big screen is very, very special, especially because of this animatronics, which define an important era. And yeah, watching in the cinema, it means experiencing the way it was released, the way many generations saw it. So without a doubt, I think this movie became really a reference for all the fantasy films that came after it. So yeah, I'm really excited. Thank you very much.
Such a sweet.
That was from Fanny. That was so nice. Yeah, I totally agree. I think movies like this really shine on the big screen.
Always.
Where you can really like be immersed in the world. And yeah, it does mean a lot to see it with your loved ones or people that you experienced childhood with.
And that's exactly what the suggestions board should be for.
Yes.
So that we can all watch our favorite films together.
Speaking of childhood and children.
The perfect bridge. Yeah, well, one of the films that really struck with me that's on this list is Alfonso Cuarón's Children of Man.
I can't really remember when I last had any hope. And I certainly can't remember when anyone else did either. Because really, since women stopped being able to have babies, what's left to hope for?
I think is such an obvious film if we talk about dystopias, but for the right reasons, because it got everything right.
Mm-hmm.
It's this post-apocalyptic dystopian world where everything is quite miserable and mostly in which fertility rates have dropped so low that people are basically, this next generation of humanity will be on the verge of existence.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Clive Owen as the protagonist who has to run through this world, and there's maybe one person, one baby, one girl who would be, you know, the sign of a new generation that he has to protect. But it's mostly for me what I always remember about this film is just how stylistically strong and immersive it is. It feels like you're really plunged into this world. You have these signature long shots that are very ambitious and scary with a lot of action packed into it. In these like
there's this one taker in the car.
We're in the car.
So
but even
crazy.
At the beginning of the film, you know, when he's like scurrying off and you have these like military presence and they need to run into some basement to take shelter from all of this violence and stuff. And just the chaos and the violence and the severity of this dystopian world is done so incredibly well. So I love to see this film here because also if we're talking big screen experiences, right, this is one that deserves
absolutely
the big screen very much.
I think this is probably the first movie I remember seeing at like an art house theater when I was 16 or 15 and it made such an impression on me.
And that's why I said obvious, right? Because it's like, it's such a strong, accessible entry point into more daring filmmaking. And then you can easily take it for granted, but actually it's still dope as fuck.
Mm-hmm. And what I always think about this movie is like, whenever I pose the question, like, what would be the most realistic apocalyptic situation? I always feel like, we're heading, if nothing changes, we're heading straight toward Children of Men.
Yeah, it's this like descent into chaos and also the exploitativeness of the entire society, because there's a super interesting bit in the film that the like high rich society of like politicians and people with a lot of wealth and power are still enjoying an insane amount of luxury yeah. in a world that is completely fucked. Like everybody is just looking completely fucked and disheveled and hungry and shit. Mm-hmm. And then you have these people still living in these like luxury, beautiful flats, looking out over the Thames River in London. And they have like accumulated all the art of the world. Like there's this insane scene where Clive Owen's character is in one of those houses. And the guy who owns it just has the entire Guernica of Pablo Picasso on his wall, right. which is just such savagery that it's also stolen out of the museum, put in his house. So the film asks a very big question, I would say, is what is the value of things in this life, right, in this world? And then, of course, a new generation babies being the most valuable, but then also all of these other tiny things and how inflated or deflated the value of things have become. In that sense, it's a very current film. And last year I had an interview with Alfonso Cuarón because he was like the main guest at the Locarno Film Festival. Right. He received an honorary award. And I was also talking about this film a lot. And for him, it was this huge moment to prove himself as well, really, as he's a Mexican director who has a big political consciousness, suddenly working in Hollywood. Never mm-hmm. forget that before this, he made the third Harry Potter film, The Prisoner of Azkaban, which is still one of the best Harry Potter films because it's made by an insane director. But we talked a lot about the timelessness of this film, and that he said, yeah, we worked so hard on getting the story right down to its basic universalities, what it means. And he said, I'm shocked how relevant it still is. It feels like a film could be made 20
years,
today.
20 years later.
It's insane. So I'm very happy to see this here. It's a grim, but very inspiring and immersive start of the year, I would say.
Again, great segue. Talking about whatever you just said. A grim start of the year. I think there's another movie you wanted to talk about.
Oh, yes. There's one that I think we, especially on this day, are obliged to talk right. about, because one of the suggestions that made the pick is Bélatar's 2000s film Werkmeister Harmonies, also known in Hungarian as Werkmeister Harmoniak. Why today this is important? Because we are recording this episode and we just heard an hour ago about the passing of its director, the Hungarian filmmaker Bélatar, who died at the age of 70, leaving behind not a lot of films, but all of the films are widely renowned and celebrated in, let's say, the more hardcore cinephile purist audiences for the undaring miserabilism and slowness, but also the surprising forms of beauty that manifest in these super dense, intense, gorgeous, but also very scary films of Bélatar. So, I mean, makes all the more sense to name at least Werkmeister Harmoniak.
Can you tell me a little bit about this movie? Because I haven't seen it.
So the script of the film is quite minimal, but it is based on a book by Laszlo Krasznahorkai, who last year was the recipient of the Nobel Prize for Literature. He's a Hungarian, very influential postmodern author, one of the greatest writing, living, working novelists from Europe that we have now. The story is very simple. It's like often with Bélatar and Krasznahorkai when they work together. Basically, a tiny community somewhere in Hungary. Everything is miserable. Everything seems very specific, but also kind of out of whack and out of place. Mm. It's just this general niche, obscure place somewhere in Hungary. And the circus arrives. But the circus is not the classic, hey, clowns and acrobats. Like one of the big pieces is the carcass of a huge whale that is being put in the center of the town, in of the village.
Wow.
There's a mysterious prince who might be a rebel or a political, let's say, dissident, or somebody at least who can rile up the population. Things happen, but never is really explained why things happen. But unrest grows, and our protagonist gets kind of like sucked into the mystery, or maybe just kind of like the shifting of the tide that is happening in this place. It's a very obscure comment about totalitarian systems, about rise of fascist populist movements, but it's done never as a political pamphlet. It's more about how scary the existential human experience is, how mm-hmm. lonely, dangerous, cold, isolated, all of these things. The films are macabre and very bitter, but they're so gorgeously shot. And oh. it's like, yeah, I don't know. Every time I watch Atar, you're just a bit silent afterwards. Like, holy shit, that's insane.
I'd love to see this because I always, like, I've never seen a Bill Atar movie. And I always, you know, the whole thing with you and me, Hugo, is always like, oh, we have a very opposite taste in movies. And whenever I think of you, it's like, well, Hugo likes kind of like the Bela Tarr stuff. And like, I've just never even dipped into that. So I'm really excited now that it's playing here that I have a chance to
honestly
sit.
For everybody who's ever thought about this kind of guy, Bela Tarr, the icon of slow cinema, mm-hmm. is it maybe too much for me? Maybe it's too slow. Yeah. Maybe it's boring. Of course, you have a film like Satan's Tango of him, which is a 7-hour film, right?
Right.
And then it's yeah. maybe a bit much. But Werkmeister Harmonic is the perfect entry point into
gateway
his films.
Drug.
It's only a bit more than 2 hours. It goes by very fast. It's super immersive. It's gorgeously shot. And if you like it, then there's a whole bunch of other films of his to enjoy. But this is the ideal one. This is also the first film of Dar that I saw when I was 15 or 16. Wow. And then I was like, okay, let's fucking go. I love this shit.
Look at us going back to our roots.
Yes,
love
exactly.
It.
So yes, RIP to a legend and a real yeah. one, Bela Tarr. I've met him a couple of times. He's a good chap, a good lad, and made some unforgettable, huge classics. So go watch this as well. So after Tarr, is there one more film, Laura, that you would like to highlight from the suggestions the board picked?
Yes. So there's so many films
yeah,
in
it's
here
a bit daunting,
that
yeah.
I love. It's like, oh my God, I think right after we record this, I'm probably going to go see Brazil if I make it in time. But I think another interesting one to talk about is Paprika.
A group of brilliant scientists have created a machine that can control our dreams. But now, the device is missing. To solve the mystery and save humanity, she must stop the dream terrorists from altering our minds.
From 2006, which is an amazing anime, during which the entire time you go, oh, that's where Christopher Nolan thought of Inception.
Yeah, we love good homages, quote unquote, right?
Yes, 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 yeah. yes. It's basically, if I remember correctly, it's this device that allows people to enter other people's dreams. And then you just go like further and further and further into these dream worlds. And there's a girl and her alter ego, Paprika, must stop the collapse of all of these worlds. And like, it's quite complicated. And when I saw it, I think it was in COVID, and I was smoking a lot of ganja and COVID. So
bacon
I don't
bread,
like, so it
ganja.
Also my experience yeah. of it is very dreamlike, yes. where I'm like, I remember all these like shards of it, but I can't fully put it together. But I know I had a great time and it looks gorgeous. So
yeah, Inception is stealing a lot from it. And Inception is the kind of film that wants to explain everything like step by step.
Right.
Yeah, no, you need to go in this dream and then that happens. And then this happens with time, right? We've discussed Nolan a lot on this podcast and
yes.
most of us are not the biggest fans. With Paprika and with these kind of like Japanese high concept sci-fi anime films, I love like Ghost in the Shell and stuff have mm-hmm. it as well, that things are taken more on face value. This is the role, this is the yep. things, this is how it works, and then you just go. So there's way less explaining and way more vibes.
Yeah.
And the vibes are heavy. They're off the charts,
they're
right?
They're off the charts.
Yes.
And I also think if you're going to make a movie about dreams, Christopher Nolan, why doesn't it look interesting? Like, dreams look weird, and there's unlimited possibilities of what you can do when you portray like what a dream looks like.
Yes.
And I think this movie just takes that to the max. It's like cities overrun with like colorful cartoon characters. And it's like, that's what a dream could look like. Just max out on how fun it could look.
Yeah, and I really like that in Lab there's a lot of like real high quality Japanese anime
yes.
films playing, because they are also, I think, real art and really deserve the big screen experience, because mm-hmm. so many people have just only seen these films, you know, through online
yeah.
or like the MTV generation of
Daily
when you
Motion.
Had these Daily Motion, but when you could find some of them on DVD in your video
yeah.
rental store back in the day. And then now to have them in the cinema and a film like Paprika is just so gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's really something to behold. So this is also, to be honest, excellent entry point into high concept Japanese sci-fi anime, which
absolutely
is a surprisingly strong genre historically.
And people love it because the top shout at the Lab Suggestions website right
yes,
now is
still Akira.
I remember seeing Akira actually here, but that was way long ago because that's when we had the old chairs. So yeah. I don't even know how long ago that was. I remember because my back still hurts from that. But the thing with these movies, and it goes for every Lab Suggestion, is that, yes, obviously we'd love to screen every single thing people shout mm-hmm. out. It's just that we then have to go to distributors and try to get the rights. And sometimes that is unfortunately just really difficult.
Yeah. For instance, the second highest is Memories of Murder by Bong Joon-ho, mm-hmm. Which is an amazing film, but is very, very difficult to get the rights of, like, internationally. And yeah. it's been this way already for a long time, which doesn't mean that the programmers in Lab don't try, because they try quite in like constantly mm-hmm. to get some of these films to come. It's just hard or expensive or like complicated, etc. So it's a whole wide world out there of film licensing and stuff.
Yep.
But the fact that we already have these banners right now playing really warms my heart at the beginning of the year.
Now we cast our eyes to the future. What are some things? Well, you already shouted out Miami Vice. I have a bunch of movies that I'm still dying to screen here, either as part of Celebrating Cinema Film Club, or if not, I will again grab that little white marker and keep writing these on the board. One that I also saw in the suggestions list there was The Dark Crystal, which is my favorite movie of all time, I'd say, probably,
also
from the
that's
Fellowship.
That's the real puppet film, right?
This is the real puppet film.
The real
that's,
dope.
It's a Jim Henson movie from the 80s. And I believe it's the first live action movie that has no people in it.
Insane.
Only puppets.
Wow.
So, and it's not Muppety. It's a serious yeah. fantasy movie. Have you seen it?
I've seen it once, yes.
It's
back
great.
In the days. It's gorgeous. It's super
so
insane.
So stunning. It's just the art of it. It's a very serious fantasy movie with concept art by Brian Froud. It's this beautiful thing that you know from like whatever your mom's goth aunt would have, like probably like troll statues in her house. It's kind of like that vibe. And it's just one of those classic hero's journeys where he has to find an object, the crystal shard, to stop the world from ending. But it's just so like every frame a painting, just stunning, stunning, stunning. If we ever screen this, I would love to screen it as a double bill with The Crystal Calls, which is the behind the scenes documentary.
Fantastic.
Just seeing them in tandem just makes my heart sing. It's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
It's like the puppet equivalent of Apocalypse Now and the Heart of Darkness
yes.
documentary. You have
sure.
to always have them
lot
together.
Lot less issues with this one. This is just like really nice and everybody's making foam puppets. So a little bit different. Do you have any other shouts that you would love to see?
I want to shout out to people that I see. There's one guy, Ivan, who suggested some insane slob, like the Schwarzenegger film End of Days, which I love very much. This was like video rental classic for me. But he also suggested a film called Vidoc,
okay.
which is an early 2000s French film shot completely digital, some hysterical, ridiculous and sci-fi adventure spectacle film. Gérard Depardieu plays in it. The special effects are very strange. The art direction
love.
Is super demented. I have a sweet spot for this film. This is just hilarious. It's stuck at the bottom with two votes, so I don't think
everybody
he's gonna make
vote.
It, but maybe with my input we can gather. And I want to shout out Maxime, who has suggested a couple of like video rental classics as well, like some submarine boat kind of films. But he also suggested Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, starring Angelina
nice.
Jolie as the iconic video game character. And I love this film from back in the past as well. And I think would be very funny to have in Lab as well. I think we should have
honestly,
more slob.
We need slob. This is what I've been saying. I think we need more slop. I think, you know, once a month, there's obviously straight to video, which does slop.
Yeah, but we need like the middle brow slop,
yes.
not the slop for the niche cult. crazy.
Yeah, but no, just like, gas station bin.
Yeah, gas station bin cinema, exactly. Like,
or
the
just
one,
like the mid like 80s.
The
kind
one
of.
One guilder, 1 euro film club. That's what we need. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'll be keeping an eye out on these lads and their suggestions, but I think we can cook some stew with these kind of films.
Oh, absolutely. There's also one more that I keep wanting to shout out because I kind of just want to see if people are down for it. Because every time I mention this in my social circles, everyone's like, I would go to that. Hot Rod.
Hot Rod. Nice.
Hot Rod. A solid like 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. Also the best movie ever made. So let us know if you'd be interested in
it. Let me tell you, Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb are always lying in these cases. True. Because if somebody like Laura says the best film ever made, never pay attention to Rotten Tomatoes. This
Thank
is
you.
The truth. This
well,
is
this
the
is
fact.
Something I do on Letterboxd is like, if a movie has like a bad rating, but there's an uptick on the 5 stars.
Yeah.
That means it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it means it's good bad.
Yes.
If it's like only 1, 2, 3 stars, then it's clearly bad.
Yeah,
but if it's
like critical vanguard who are reclaiming the film against the Philistines, and that's
because a movie can be bad and fun. Like something does not have to be good to be fun. So hopefully we can someday do a program with movies that aren't good but are fun.
I want to very briefly say the anecdote that I recently, in the demented Christmas New Year's period, watched Danny Boyle's Yesterday. Which is such an awful, demented film, but I was completely fascinated by it. I'm just dropping it because I will come back to this film in the future because I'm quite obsessed.
With Ed Sheeran?
Yeah, Ed Sheeran is in it. It says enough, I think. I think on this note, we need to stop. Otherwise, we're going to talk about some insane shit.
Yeah, we're going to really embarrass ourselves here. Those were our opinions on the lab suggestions. If you want your voice note featured on a future episode, you can talk to us about any new releases coming up, anything that's currently playing at lab. You can send those to celebratingcinema@lab111.nl. Don't forget to get your tickets to our lab suggestions program. You know where to find the tickets. They're in the show notes and otherwise at lab111.nl. Our next episode is about the importance of documentaries, why we watch them, and how they can shape public opinion. If you like this episode, please support us by leaving a review and sharing it with friends. See you next week. This was a Lab 111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom, with music from Hugo Emmertzall and artwork from Studio FFF.